Most women are familiar with the annual pelvic exam. But if a new clinical guideline issued by the American College of Physicians is followed, it could be a thing of the past. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July 10th. But the recommendation that doctors stop performing routine pelvic exams in asymptomatic non-pregnant women could be controversial, and we will talk with a Wisconsin OBGYN about what women should do. Should we get that annual, sometimes awkward exam or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you have questions about this new clinical guideline. Our guest is Dr. Dana Benden. She's an obstetrician and gynecologist at Gunderson Health System. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess I've had probably 30 or 40 of these annual pelvic exams. Now you tell me. Just kidding. Let's clarify what we're talking about first and what this guideline is saying. What is the pelvic exam?
Well, the pelvic examination is the part of the exam where the physician will examine the external genitalia, and they use a speculum to insert into the vagina and visualize the vagina, the cervix, and then do a bimanual exam where they insert their fingers into the vagina to be able to feel the uterus, ovaries, and that usually also includes a rectal examination.
This guideline and the pelvic exam itself is not referring to the pap smear?
No, it is not referring to the pap smear.
Mm-hmm.
So the guidelines for cervical cancer screening are being maintained as established, but they are recommending that the pelvic examination portion go away.
And what was the point of the pelvic exam?
Well, the point of the pelvic exam, there are really numerous amounts of information that you can get. When we're doing pelvic examinations, you know, we're looking in particular on the skin of the vulvar area for any precancerous changes or cancers that can happen in the skin in that area. The same goes for the vagina, looking at the vagina and the cervix. And then we can detect abnormalities of the uterus, ovaries, and also of the rectum and anal canal, which can also have abnormalities within them. So part of that examination is screening for potential masses or cancer that might be there. But there are also other benign conditions that we can detect, whether it be uterine fibroids or endometriosis findings that may not have been able to be found without doing a pelvic examination.
But the recommendation or the guideline issued by the American College of Physicians says that, I guess, that these annual routine pelvic exams are unnecessary. What's your take on that?
Well, I actually disagree with the opinion. You know, the opinion is actually based on the absence of evidence for doing pelvic examinations instead of being based on evidence alone. The majority of the opinion is talking about the detection of ovarian cancer in particular and whether or not doing a pelvic examination would change somebody's morbidity or mortality or be able to detect ovarian cancer. So a lot of the focus of the opinion and the evidence that they're utilizing are from studies that were looking at not just pelvic examination, but looking at other modalities like ultrasound and laboratory evaluation for the detection of ovarian cancer. We know that those modalities have not helped us improve the detection of ovarian cancer, but there's actually been no studies directly looking at pelvic examination in asymptomatic women for the detection of benign gynecologic conditions, ovarian cancer, or other pelvic inflammatory disease and infection.
Yeah, the guideline, or you call it the opinion, also said that that it could it it provokes anxiety and trauma in some women, and that there really isn't the need to do, especially this bimanual examination.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, I don't think that I've had patients that thoroughly enjoy having a pelvic examination. That is true. However, I think when you establish a relationship with a physician, that that examination can be accomplished without the kind of shame or fear or anxiety that some women might have. I think it also is, you know, could be said that men probably have similar anxieties about having testicular exams or rectal examinations. And but I think that some of that is just establishing a relationship with a provider that you can feel safe being examined.
Yeah, the group College of the American College of Physicians said there is no evidence that cancer is detected by pelvic exams alone. I guess saying that if somebody's not exhibiting some symptoms, you know, there's no need to do these every year. And if there are symptoms, perhaps that's when you do them.
Well, and I think that just in, I think that there are two things. Number one, the American College of OBGYN, which is ACOG, had issued a committee opinion in 2012 that looked at a well woman examination, and they had continued to recommend annual pelvic examinations, acknowledging that there's no direct evidence for or against pelvic examination. I think that what the American College of Physicians opinion doesn't acknowledge is that there really is no direct evidence that says that a pelvic examination is not useful. So I think that it is probably a little bit premature to say that all pelvic examinations, annual pelvic examinations, should be stopped in women who have no complaints without having the direct evidence to say that they are or are not useful.
Mm-hmm.
And when doing examinations, you know, oftentimes women may not complain of symptoms, but during examinations, it starts a conversation that they may feel more comfortable in acknowledging symptoms that they may have. And while we tend to get focused on cancer, which is a big effect for patients, there are other you know, issues that can come up during that examination that they may not otherwise have felt comfortable discussing, whether it's their problems with urinary incontinence or vaginal discharge or pain during intercourse. And some of those they may not be as upfront about, or may not even acknowledge that this is something that is not normal. They may just kind of chalk it up to, well, I'm getting older and this is just what happens. So I think that there is a lot to be gained by that, both from an educational standpoint to the patient, and that you may actually get symptoms during the examination that you may not have recovered with just an oral history.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone in disagreeing with this recommendation. A lot of the media coverage since this new clinical guideline was issued last week shows that there are doctors who are saying, hey, wait a minute, I disagree. So what do you think, what happens to a recommendation like this?
Well, I think that there's probably going to be some conflicting care, and the care that you will have for a well woman examination will probably depend on who does your examination and what their feeling is about this particular recommendation. I think that, you know, there are providers who may also feel uncomfortable, just like patients, with doing this examination, and so this is a way to say, well, you don't need that anymore, and you know, phew, I don't have to do that anymore either. So I think that there's going to be probably a little bit of stratification of how patients get their examinations depending on who they seek care from. I hope that, you know, providers at least have a conversation with patients to say that, you know, there are conflicting opinions. The American College of Physicians has issued this clinical practice guideline, and the American College of OBGYN has a contradictory opinion to say that pelvic examinations still should continue or at least be offered in discussion as to why it may be beneficial to patients.
Well, we welcome your questions for our guest, OBGYN, Dr. Dana Benden. About this report, this clinical guideline that was issued by the American College of Physicians, saying that pelvic exams should not be routinely performed because it says there is no evidence that cancer is detected this way. We're discussing the findings. Our guest disagrees with the American College of Physicians recommendation. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking about the controversy over a newly issued clinical guideline practice issued by the American College of Physicians saying that doctors should stop performing routine pelvic exams on healthy, low-risk women. We are talking with a guest OBGYN from Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, Dr. Dana Benden, who disagrees with this recommendation. And we're welcoming your questions, your views on this, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have a caller, so let's go to Stephanie in Fond du Lac. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I am in agreement with you about the fact that, the idea that the routine exams shouldn't necessarily be stopped. Ovarian cancer is an issue, but I also know that there are other gynecological issues that are important and could be undetected if not by those routine exams. So I definitely think that that's not anything that should be, it shouldn't be taken away in that sense. So that's how I feel about it. I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, Stephanie, I don't mean to press, but you had something detected by one of the pelvic exam.
Yes, yes. It was not ovarian cancer, but it was endometriosis and uterine fibroids and ovarian cysts.
Yeah. Dr. Benden?
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of women have benign gynecologic conditions where they might not completely, you know, see that their symptoms are related to certain things related to their gynecologic organs. So, you know, these things can affect fertility, they can cause pelvic pain, they can cause pain with intercourse. And again, these are symptoms, but they oftentimes may not have symptoms. Or they may have symptoms that are more vague that some women may not attribute to what's going on, and then that can be detected on pelvic exam, and patients can have treatment for those findings.
Yeah, thank you very much, Stephanie, for sharing your experience and your view on this. Olga writes on Facebook, "I think it's necessary, and it's not a matter of saving money; it's about saving lives." Let's talk a little bit about that, Dr. Benden. Is there any sort of financial reason why this group of physicians would say stop performing the pelvic exam?
Well, again, I think that part of the issue in their guideline is a lot of the information that they are basing their opinion on is related to studies that have looked at screening measures, in particular for ovarian cancer. And in those studies, they use transvaginal ultrasound and blood testing to try to see if that enhances the detection of ovarian cancer, which has not been found to be helpful in the general screening population. Those tests do increase the amount of expenditure to the healthcare system without a lot of benefit in general screening for the population. But a routine pelvic examination is a, you know, approximately 1 to 2 minute part of the examination that is basically just a speculum, a light, and the physician's hands. So there's really not an exorbitant cost that is added to the routine examination by doing this portion of the pelvic examination.
I see. Yeah. So, but aren't there other ways to detect fibroids or cysts or, you know, abnormalities like ultrasound, for example, instead of having the pelvic exam?
Well, then, you know, we'd be looking at, well, how do we utilize ultrasound? And if we're talking about cost, you know, it'd definitely be less cost effective to do an ultrasound on every patient from a screening perspective than it is to do an examination. Because with examination, if you have a normal examination, those patients would not need ultrasound. Whereas if you do an examination that you find something, then you would move on to the next step of doing ultrasound. But ultrasound in general is expensive, and it's not been shown to be an effective screening test just for the general population, whether it's for detection of cancer or benign gynecologic conditions.
You know, I'm looking at a number of headlines that we found on this particular issue. Skip the stirrups. Doctors rethink yearly pelvic exams. Routine pelvic exam is unnecessary for women without symptoms, experts say. Here's one. This was more of an opinion piece, but it was, this test at your gyno's office is painful and a waste of time. So are you concerned of the coverage that this particular recommendation is getting?
I am. You know, I did the same kind of, you know, Google search to just see what is out there as far as headlines go, and I found the same types of information. However, if you look at some of the other kind of, you know, institutions like American College of OBGYN issuing a statement, you know, I consider, you know, a statement from, say, the Canadian healthcare system saying that we are going to still be performing annual pelvic examinations despite a American recommendation by the American College of Physicians that that they should stop performing pelvic examinations. I think that in general, when you look at other healthcare groups, in particular the American College of OBGYN, you know, what we are looking for is to say, instead of kind of jumping to the conclusion to remove pelvic examinations from the routine physical exam, we may need more studies to look at its effectiveness instead of making a recommendation based on the absence of evidence.
So your recommendation to women who are listening right now?
Well, my recommendation to patients is going to be to continue having yearly pelvic examinations. You know, I do have patients that I encounter that have had, you know, physical assault or, you know, have difficulty with pelvic examinations because of previous sexual abuse. And I, you know, there are ways to be able to discuss that with patients and then decide whether or not a patient needs an examination. And if they do need an examination, we can do exams, you know, under conscious sedation or be able to do them so that they don't have the pain and discomfort and anxiety that group of patients might have. But I personally am still going to be performing pelvic examinations for my patients.
Yeah. Now, turning to the PAP, though, are there new guidelines in terms of whether we need an annual PAP? We only have a couple of minutes, but I did want to, even though this recommendation said keep the PAP, what is the current recommendation when it comes to having a PAP smear?
So the current recommendations is there was a group that issued recommendations in coordination with American College of OBGYN that you have a PAP smear, which is the kind of traditional cervical cytology evaluation. And then in addition, on that same smear, you can, or sample, you can obtain an HPV test. So for women over the age of 30, if they are screened with a Pap test and HPV, and both of those tests are negative, then they would need another evaluation in 5 years. In institutions that do not perform HPV screening, then the recommendation is that they have a Pap test every 3 years.
Yeah. And that's why I don't have to have another one for a while, and I wanted that clarified.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Dr. Dana Benden, an obstetrician and gynecologist at Gunderson Health System, talking with us about why she disagrees with this new recommendation from the American College of Physicians that doctors stop performing the annual routine pelvic exam. And we thank her for her time. We will post more information on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up, we are going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will switch gears and talk about another health topic. We're going to talk about the health risks involved with excessive alcohol consumption. Fourth leading cause of death in the United States, after the news.